Today we're going to be speaking about a number of different surgical procedures, five in total, what we call surgical procedures that are done to animals, and how they affect the caches of those animals. The first two are going to be a little bit connected to what we spoke about last time, and that is as follows. The first is a sefer called Oitzer Zichron Nosei, printed in the 1920s, which a person writes on all different kinds of issues that were going on in the United States at that time. And the question we're speaking about is that people had this practice of puncturing an animal's neck before they did shechita. Excuse me. And the reason why they did that is because they said it was to relieve the heat exhaustion. The animals were so hot, and that somehow that would help the animals manage and survive through the shechita. But the question that it raises is that we have any animal that's punctured as a whole in any place in the neck raise the question of kuas hafeshet, and that there might be a hole in the feshet which would make the animal into a trefa. So they sent the shayla to Rabbi Yosef Shaul Nathanson. They sent him the shayla, and he spoke of, and he said, well, you know, he brings down this shita in Pesach Tshuva about that since when a procedure is done by an expert, as he spoke about this time, if it's done by an expert who's very careful to not render the animal a trefa, then there's no problem, and you could trust that he does it properly. And so therefore these people are being done, these experts are doing it correctly, and therefore we don't have to worry that they touch the veshet, since they're being careful and they know exactly what they're doing. Okay, well, a number of people disagree with that. One of them in particular is Avram Reis from Baltimore, Rice, however you pronounce his name, from Baltimore, an early rabbi in the United States, who said that the people doing this had nothing to do, they were not doing it properly. These were people who were all discredited shechtim. They weren't, you know, reputable people. They were doing it to help, nothing to do with the health of the animal. They were doing it in order to make the meat be whiter, which somehow that was considered better. In fact, they did it even in the middle of the winter when the animals weren't hot at all. They weren't the problem of them coming on boats and becoming real hot. Sometimes they were such, so to speak, non-experts that it's almost like more than one cut before they got the animal to bleed the way they wanted it to. Anyhow, so Mr. Scholl retracted his cool to them and said that no one should do that and it shouldn't be done. Okay, that was something that happened back in the 1920s. Where there, the people were claiming to be experts, but in fact, there really wasn't any great expertise, and it was not being done properly, and therefore that was considered to be not a kosher animal. That's one case that was happened some time ago. But there's another thing which continues to happen, and that's called, and that's the question of a capon chicken. Okay, what's a capon chicken? It's not something new, and what it is that they remove the testicles from a male chicken when it's very young, a very young chicken, and that somehow makes the meat come out more tender when they eventually slaughter this chicken. The testicles in the chicken are located near the spine, and they're not next to each other, one on each side. And the process of removing the testicles is called caponizing, and of course that's why they're called capon chicken when they're finished. Okay, in order to do that, you make a slice in the chicken's chest, underneath the lower ribs, spread apart the ribs a little bit, and get them with a special tool to cut out the kidneys, which are yellow, and they look sort of like a kidney shape. They do this when the chicken's a couple of weeks old, and again, when they sell it, that's called a capon chicken. Now, it's obvious that a yid is not allowed to do that. This procedure is also because of sirus. You're not allowed to be mesirus an animal, so for sure they're not allowed to do that, but at the same time, the inherently removing testicles is not something that makes an animal to a trefa. So from that perspective, there's no issue from the trefa side of it, of the animal being trefa. However, there is a shayla that once you poke into an animal's insides, once you start cutting around to the insides, there's possibilities that some of the intestines can get a hole in them, or they get pulled out of the body cavity, both of which will make the animal to a trefa. And the shop talks about whether if you find when you shech the animal that the intestines are in the wrong place, whether that's a reisa and causes to be choshesh that it wasn't done properly, and therefore the animal would be a trefa. There's a shach who speaks about that. But a number of the achronim there's a Golem, Prima Golem, and others speak, say that assuming that there's no special reza, then you're allowed to eat it, and you can assume, in this case, that the people doing the procedure know what they're doing and are careful not to cut into the intestines and to other places that will make it a trefa. In fact, nowadays, the guide that they have nowadays for people how to do this procedure talks about two other problems. Okay, other slips, you're not getting enough of it out, or hitting a certain artery that would kill the bird. But the people who are doing this are assumed to be careful and know what they're doing, and therefore the capon chicken is not considered to be a trefa. I don't know if it exists actually in kosher version now. I don't know if actually this thing is a slaughter of a kosher capon chickens, but if there would be, a yid would not be allowed to do that. Because it is sort of serious, but the perspective of trefas, as long as it's done by someone with experience, then we don't have concern. Okay, our next thing to speak about is something called a cannulated cow, and that is when a vet or a scientist wants to study how an animal's stomachs and how it's functioning, what they do is they literally cut a hole in the side of the animal, and they cut up a hole, they put something around it to keep it secure or keep it from closing back up, and that way they can then stick their hands in, or I guess they put gloves on, stick their hands in to work with the inside of the animal. Okay, now it's done, we'll see in a minute in our next section exactly where they do it, but they cut this in on the left side of the animal to be able to get into the carcass, which is one of the stomachs, the rumen of a cow, and that doing that makes an animal to trefa. It's considered a cut into the basar ha'chayfer as right carcass if the hole is big enough, which it probably is, and if it's, even if it's not big enough, cutting the actual carcass itself, we'll see soon, makes any hole makes the animal to a trefa, and therefore that animal is a trefa. So the meat and the milk from that cow from that animal would definitely be a trefa. Not sure how common it is that animal would actually make it to be slaughtered for beef or use its milk, but it would be trefa. But the shayla that did come up was that in studying these animals, one of the goals that one person had was they wanted to remove something from inside the stomach and culture it and grow into something that they thought would be beneficial to for some kind of a food use. And in that case, so the shayla was, here we have an animal that's a trefa. The milk of the animal would be trefa. The beef, if you would chef the animal, the cow would be trefa, because the animal's a trefa. What about the something removed from the stomach that was cultured to make some kind of grow some kind of a microorganism? And in that case, Rabelski said that the animal is not that, but they culture from it is mutter because that's considered pirsha. We spoke about this when we learned Simin Pei Aleph, that not everything that comes out, not every product or byproduct of a trade animal is considered yotzei, which is usser. Like the milk is considered yotzei, which is usser. Some things that are not edible and disgusting, or those things that are called pirsha, like excrement, and those things don't have the din of yotzei, and they are mutter. So in this case, Rabelski permitted them to use the what had come out of the cow's stomach, which was then cultured into some kind of a food item. But now we move on to two larger and more serious questions that are basically happen all the time. They're a regular occurrence nowadays. And they're as follows. The first issue we're going to talk about is called, which is now our fourth issue, is called ruminal tympany, okay, which is a kind of bloating in an animal. And that is cows, all ruminants have four stomachs. And in the very first stomach is called the carcass or the rumen, that's what it's called. And what happens in that stomach is the cow eats grass or eats whatever it wants to eat, and the grass sits there and ferments. In the process of fermenting, it gives off methane. The cow has to burp up that methane. Just as an aside, it's considered to be a big cause of greenhouse gases, which affect the environment, from all the cows that are always belching up these gases. So what happens is, and it continues to burp them up. In Uruguay, and potentially in some of the countries, something in the countries right around Uruguay, in that part of the world, the animals there develop a bloating in this first stomach, in the carcass. You know, this shayla is not a new shayla. This goes on, it went on in many places, but at this time where we stand, it's primarily an issue in Uruguay and possibly in some of the surrounding areas, and it has to do with what they feed the animals and the climate that the animals have. Animals, it seems that animals who eat certain foods, alfalfa and clover and maybe a lot of good pasture, develop this bloat. Okay? And what happens is that the bloat comes because one of the main reason why the bloat comes from is because if inside the carcass, inside the stomach, the rumen, if they develop a foam, then that foam prevents the belching, it prevents the reflex that tells the cow to belch, and that causes it to bloat, this stomach bloats, and potentially the cow could die from this condition. In more advanced cultures, in other places, they feed, something basically like an antifoam. They put it into the animal's food to make sure the animal doesn't develop this condition. But in Uruguay and again maybe other places, there's a problem that they don't always give this to the animals. Some of the animals are just roaming the fields and eating in the pastures, and therefore they develop this bloat. Okay, how do farmers or herdsmen deal with this problem? How do they solve the problem that animals had suffering from this bloat? So the simplest way, the most crude way to do it is to poke a hole into the side of the animal with a knife in order to relieve this bloating. Okay, just release the gas. It used to be done with a knife, and now it's done with a fancier tool called the trocar, which is essentially another version of a knife. It's going to make a hole. It's like a long tube that has a sharp edge on one side, and you stick it in through the animal's skin, through its carcass, to relieve this bloating that's in there. Now, the way this is done tends to be done the following. Surely nowadays, the way it's done is as follows. If you look at a cow, you'll see on the left side, behind the ribs, up towards the top, behind the ribs, there's a triangular area. In fact, the Shechtim called the meshulash, the triangle. It's a little recessed into the cavity. So you can see it's recessed, that part of the skin is recessed. It's as if sunk in towards the top behind the ribs. And if the top of the carcass is right at the bottom of this triangular area, okay, it's called the paralumbar fossa. That's the official, that's the Latin name for it. But it's the carcass, the top of the carcass is right at the bottom, is toward by the bottom of this triangular area. Now, what happens is when the cow eats, the grasses and the fermentation are happening at the bottom of the carcass. They sink to the bottom, and the gases are collected at the top. So if the place where the farmer or the person out there wants to stick his knife or his trocar in is right there at the bottom of this triangular area, because he knows he's going to hit the carcass, and he's also safe of not hitting other things. There aren't other sensitive parts in that area, and therefore that's the place where the cow would be poked, punctured, in order to get out to relieve this gas. So there's a long disfitude about this, and we'll see other people who spoke about it. Shlomo Kluger speaks about it, and we'll see, as I'm speaking, other people who speak about the Shiloh. It's something that's gone on over all the generations. Again, nowadays it's less common because we give the animals get fed special feed, so they don't eat the, so to speak, wrong foods. Plus, they get something mixed into them that prevents the bloating by giving them this antifoam type things. And the Shiloh is like this. The beginning of the Mishnah says that a hole in the carcass hapnimi, again, this stomach is called the carcass. So the carcass hapnimi, the inner carcass, makes the animal to a tray for any hole. Okay? And the implication is that there's a carcass hachitzen, there's an outside carcass, where a hole would not make the animal to a tray for. Okay? So the Gemara has many, many opinions as to what it means, what is the carcass hapnimi, and what is the carcass hachitzen. Which is the one that even a small hole makes it a tray for, and which is the one that's not? And the Mechaber, and Shulchan Aruch follows the most Rishonim who say the strictest approach, which says is the entire keres is considered a keres hapnimi, and the keres hachitzen means the basar hachofes reva keres. It means the muscle that surrounds the keres, the whole side, the whole diaphragm, that side of the animal, the muscle that surrounds the keres, that's considered the keres hachitzen, where that only, in order to be considered a trefa, you'd have to rip a tefach worth of that muscle. And so the keres hapnimi, even it means the whole keres, it has even the smallest hole mixed into a trefa, but the keres hachitzen, which means muscle surrounding it, that needs a bigger hole in it. Okay, so according to what the Mechaber says, any time a farmer, did this kind of a procedure, this surgical procedure, or poked his knife in or his trocar into the animal to relieve the blow from the rumen, from the keres, would make down to a trefa. He made a hole, which is even a hole of a mashu makes it usher. He made it, he didn't make any hole in the he made a small hole in the basar, chayfer, sreva, keres. That's not why it's a trefa, but it's a trefa because the keres itself has a hole in that. Okay? So that's the potential problem that we have with this procedure. Now, this procedure was done so often that and the animals live perfectly fine. No animals die. It's not a regular thing that animals die because of this. Well, when they did use knives, they could get infected. But nowadays, even the trocars are more sterile and there's less of a problem of infection. So we saw when we learned Simon Pevav that the Hagon, the Torah on this din says, he said, I don't know what to tell you. Every rabbi does this all the time, and animals are perfectly fine. So the fact that the animals all live should be a raya like the other shittas in the Gemara, or the other shittas in Rishonim of which of the shittas we should pass like, which is that says the keres hapnimi means, the keres hapnimi means a certain part of the very bottom of the keres, all the way at the bottom, it's a raya pinakaka, the part that's on the very bottom of the keres, but all the rest of the keres doesn't have this din. It's just because we see it all the time, the animals live. Okay, so we had mentioned then in Sim Pevav that there's such a sheep, there's such a hagah, a comment on the side of the Torah who says this, and the Bach says it's not true, disagrees with it and says, no, it's not true, we can't discard this whole din, we pass on this sheetah, we can't just throw out the din and say, well, just because we see all these animals living, that proves that sheetah of Rishonim, which is basically a sheetah in the Gemara, is wrong. Okay, so most poskim assume that we follow what the Mechaber says, that the animal's a trefa if it has a hole any place in the keres. What there is a machlokes is what about, is that, this that we say that the animal is a trefa if it has a hole in the keres, like most Rishonim say, is that because we're sure that's what it is? Are we passing the vados that the din is that an animal with a hole in that spot is a trefa? Or is it a suffix, either a suffix in the Metzias, I mean the Gemara only meant that it's a suffix trefa, or is it a suffix who we postulate? So we're machmir, but even when we're machmir, we're a suffix. What's the difference? Whether we're machmir because we're sure, or machmir because of a suffix. What should be the difference between those two? And the answer is, as we spoke about in Simon Pevav, is what happens if the animal lives for 12 months when the animal gives birth? So the Shukhar tells us that if an animal has a suffix trefus and it lives for 12 months, or becomes pregnant and carries through to a full term to a live baby, then that animal is not, that reflects back and tells us that the suffix trefus was not a trefa. But that only works by a suffix trefa. We have a vada trefa, we don't use that as a proof. So in this case, if the animal is considered to be a suffix trefa, then the fact that it lives 12 months afterwards or becomes pregnant and gives birth would tell us that the animal is kosher. But if it's vadei trefa, then that wouldn't work. So the Chacham Sadon speaks about this. The Chacham Sadon speaks about a case where the animal lived for 12 months, which he wasn't happy that they let it stay around. It's a different child. How could you let it stay around for 12 months? But he wasn't happy about it. But what he said, if it stayed for 12 months, it's only a suffix if it was a trefa in the first place. So therefore, living 12 months proves that it's a kosher animal. And Rav Moshe says like that also, as does Rav Avadya also says like that, that it's considered a suffix trefa. And Mamela, so if it lives for 12 months, then we have right that it's kosher. Okay? On the other hand, Prim Bagum says, there in the simon, he says, no, it's a trefa, it's not a suffix trefa, living 12 months is not enough. Elsewhere, the Prim Bagum says, since most Rishonim say a certain way, that's not considered suffix anymore. So this is a question, in the Achronim, whether what would happen if the animal lives for 12 months, could we use that as a raya that the animal's not a trefa? But all of that, is that whole view, and lots of the poskim speak about that, in the Beis Dovid has lots and lots of shittas he brings about this whole shaila. And the difference doesn't, if it lives for 12 months, or if it gives birth afterwards. But our question is not that. Our question is, we have animals that have no, that have, that if an animal had this procedure, we have no idea, did it happen yesterday or a year ago? We have no idea whether the animal lived for 12 months afterwards. These are animals, I forgot to mention, these are animals in Uruguay that are used for beef. So they have, and also the way that farming works in Uruguay is the farmers are very, the cows are, so to speak, on their own, And we have no records or any way of knowing that this animal went and had its procedure done to it. So, seemingly, all should agree, again, except for the Hagon and the Torah, all should agree that the animals are considered to be traitors if they had this procedure done to them. So, there's a lot of kosher shechita in Uruguay. It's a place where it makes a lot of kosher meat. And the Shechton of Boykim started noticing that in the carcass of cows, they were noticing scars, and some look like what they call a zager, like a clog, and the other kinds of spots. And they started noticing things that they had never seen on a carcass of a cow before. And in checking other countries, they almost never see ever. And with time, they came to realize that the scar that they're seeing, these marks that they're seeing, are the scar of an animal that had this procedure done to it. And with time, they developed all kinds of expertise in knowing which things are a sign of the animal having had this done to it, and which ones are not. And now, just about every shechita, in South America, includes a boidik to check that doesn't have this. If they find the scars, they find these kind of simanim that this had happened to it, and it had this luminal tympani and was treated for it, then the animal is going to be considered trait. They don't accept it. So they have a special boidik to do that. There are different shechitas that had to do this. Some are boidik. They look for the scar. They look for the scar on the muscle on the animal. Some look for the scar on the carcass itself. But by and large, everybody is basically looking for it. It appears that the amount of animals that have it is an amount that's probably not me at Hamotzi. Technically, probably not 10% of the animals. Probably a few percent of the animals. But it's something that people are aware of and they're sensitive for, and they have a basically, everyone has a boidik, a special boidik whose job is to check them, okay, either in the carcass or the look on the muscle. Okay. That's our fourth. But our last question is something that many people have heard about, and that's called displaced abomasum. Okay. Now, this question is very similar to the one before, and it's both a question of bloating in the animal, but it's different in the following number of ways. In the ruminal tympani, we're talking about a problem where an animal had it bloating in its first stomach, in the carcass. Now we're talking about having bloating in its fourth stomach, what we call the cavo, the abomasum. Okay? That's why it's called displaced abomasum. And in this case, these are cows that are used for milking. It's a problem milking cows. And the other one was for a cow destined for beef. And these are cows, Farker, who do not live out on the pastures, who are given special feeds, and the feed affects their cava to cause this kind of bloating. Now, what we'll see what's relevant for us going forward as well is that the cava, the fourth stomach, is on the right side of the cow, as opposed to the carcass, which is on the left side of the cow. We'll see the nafkamina for that as we go on. So, it seems that this bloating issue tends to happen if the first time the animal gives birth. There are those who theorize that maybe it happens because now that the baby came out, there's more room to move around. So when the bloating comes, what happens is the cava, the abomasum, becomes bloated, becomes enlarged because of the food that's in there. And there are two versions of how this happens. One version is right displaced abomasum, RDA, is it bloats and it lifts up and gets intertwined or mixed together with the third stomach, with the cow's third stomach, the hemsis, the omasum, it's called. That's the third stomach of the cow. That's one possible problem. The other problem is called left displaced abomasum, and that is the cava, which is on the right side of the animal, gets bloated and slides under and over onto the left side of the cow, okay, which is way out of place of where it's supposed to be. That's called left displaced abomasum. Okay, so they're both called, overall we call this thing displaced abomasum because the cava, the abomasum, is being displaced. It's not where it belongs. Either it's floated up on the right side or it floated down and around on the left side to the cow. Okay, so there are some ways to treat this that don't pose any child at all of traitors. They just massage the animal in different ways, which relieves the bloating, gets the stomach, the cava back to where it belongs, and obviously that's no problem, nothing to do. But most of the time, in order to solve this problem, one of two things, or both, have to be done. And one of the things is to insert a syringe to relieve the bloating into the cava to get the bloating out, and the other is to attach the cava back to where it's supposed to be, either with stitches or a toggle, the different ways to do it to get that. The second one is a surgical procedure. You got to cut open the animal, or typically cut open the animal and attach the cava back to where it's supposed to be, anchor it down to where it's supposed to be. And seemingly both of those should cause the animal to become a trapher, because a cava also, if it has even any small hole in it, makes the animal to trapher. So whether you make a hole by poking a needle into it to get the gas out, or you stitch it, or you toggle it to attach it, are going to make a hole in the animal in order to make it into a trapher. Now, as an aside, is that because the cava is on the right side of the animal, then even if you were to cut in the surgery to pull it out, pull it to the right spot and attach it, the cutting of the muscle does not make the animal trapher, because the muscle that you can't cut is the basar hachlifus, right, like keris, that's on the left side of the animal, the part that covers the keris. The part that's on the muscle on the right side of the animal, which is where you typically be cutting in order to pull the cava back to its place, the right side is not basar hachlifus, right, like keris. It's not, the animal doesn't become a trapher by cutting that muscle, so therefore, cutting the muscle is not the problem. But the problem is that making the hole in the cava would be a problem. Now, that's a potential issue. It's more chomer than the case we spoke about before in the shaila in the room in the keres, because in the keres we at least had a possible suffix. Maybe making a hole doesn't make it into a trefa, as we mentioned. There are those who hold that that's not a trefa. In the cava, of course, it is a trefa wherever the hole is. But much more common about it is that this happens to dairy cows. This happens to animals that are that are used for providing milk. If we're only having the shayla on milk, the shayla is much more common. That's because, for starters, the milk that's going to come out of a cow, if the milk came out of a cow that's a trefa, that milk is not kosher. But that milk is not sold by itself in a bottle. It's milking to thousands of other gallons of milk. The milk, for sure, we bought the barayv, the trade milk into the kosher milk, we bought the barayv. So on a deraisa level, the milk, the whole mixture is kosher. It's min b'mina, it's bought the barayv. So mitzrabanan, it needs to have shishim. Pasha says that there's not shishim. Usually there's a few percent of these cows on a farm, so they would not be bought the shishim. But the shayla we're talking about is only a shayla if it's a drabanan. Okay, we're only talking about a drabanan, that mitrabanan wasn't bottle. So the shayla of the trefus is, of course, the shayla of the raisa, but we're not eating the cow. We're dealing with the fact, can we drink the milk? And the milk, the way it comes to us, is at a point where it's already bottle, bottle baroi, so it's only a shayla of drabanan. Okay, there are other reasons to why it's more kal, like, for example, the animal gave birth. Right, dairy cows aren't valuable; they don't give birth afterwards. So, if it had a procedure when it was a few years old, for many years it keeps giving birth. So, at least if there's a suffix, it would be mutter, as we mentioned beforehand. Some people say that the isra of yotzei on the milk is less serious than the isra on the cow. We spoke about that in sim pe'alav. I'm sorry, in sim kuf tesvav. Some people say maybe it's not matzoi. Maybe the since it's only a yotzei, it could be about the broad. There's other possibly the reason why it's possibly more cow. Okay? But the simple understanding is that when this procedure is done to the animal, it's going to make the animal to a trefa. All the reputable hashgachas, at least in the United States, that produce Chol Yisrael milk or Chol Yisrael cheeses, all of them are particular and makbid to not allow these kind of cows. That is to say, is when they go to milk the cows, part of the mashgiach job is, aside from making sure that they're only milking kosher species like cows, he also removes all these animals. Okay, that job to remove these animals that have the surgery is, at least nowadays, is not terribly difficult. The simple reason is because the reason why he can do it is because most modern farms are computerized with clear records of every single cow. Every cow's got a mark. Tag, we know exactly what cow it is, and the computer could tell us everything that happened to it. So by looking at computerized records, we could see which cows had this procedure done to them, and those cows can be pulled out and not used during milking for Chol Yisrael. The ones that had a surgery to them can also have a scar to them, will have a large scar that's easy to notice. But even the ones that didn't have surgery, they just relieved the gas without a surgery, there'll be records of that, and that's can be pulled out. So all Chol Yisrael does that. And of course, many people who give Hashgach on the Chol Yisrael assume that it isn't required to do that. But aside that they hold that it's required, it's also relatively straightforward and easy to do that. There's a mashgiach standing there. In contrast, chof stam pilots, they're not makbid. No one's makbid at all. They all assume that you're allowed to drink the milk. No one goes to the farm at all to try to pull up the cows. So those are two types of reasons. One reason is they might feel is, yes, the animal's a trefa, but I don't have to take it out. It's bottle. I say called the parish. The milk that comes out is bottle. I'm not mechuyev when it's not so much, so it's only a few percent. I'm not mechuyev to go to such lengths to send a person down to every farm. Those kind of reasons, which is to say, is the milk is actually treif. But once it's mixed with other milk, so once it's in a farm, I don't have to worry about that. I'm not required to get that milk, to get those cows out, and I can let the milk be produced as and sold to people. The other way of looking at it is, others say, yes, I can produce the chov stam even though it has these cows in it, because I don't consider them to be trefas, okay? And a whole number of reasons are given as to why they might not be trefas. Primarily, Rudelsky wrote an article in Messer magazine, in the journal, Messer journal, and he wrote in there a whole number of reasons why he thought the animals are not a trefa. Okay, so I'll quickly mention a few, then we're going to focus on one of the reasons that he gave, okay? One reason is, he says, you know, the din is if you make a hole in the keva, on one side of the keva, the inner side of the keva, called the yasra, on that side of it, it seals itself back up. The fat on that side seals itself up. So he says, so maybe that's where the puncture happened. He says, then he says something else. He says something, this is probably the most well-known position Rebelsky said about this question. He says, the needle goes in, no one makes a hole straight through the whole keva. There are different layers to the keva, and they go through layer one, then they slide over and make another hole, and they slide over again and make another hole. So there's no hole that goes straight through, but rather it's a different layer. Each layer, the hole's in a different spot, and therefore it's not a hole at all in the keva. Okay, that idea, that such a concept that it's not like that, is something that veterinarians were not able to confirm. They said they had no idea what that meant, that the holes are made in this special way. The way they understand it is, they just poke it right through and just goes through and makes it, may go at an angle, or may go stitched at, you know, a 45-degree angle, but by and large, the needle goes right through. Other things he said was maybe if you seal things up right away, that's not considered a trefa. And he had come up with the reasons why so many different procedures weren't trefas, that the little bit that was left that he would acknowledge might be a trefas. He says, so those who bought the machine, the amount of milk from those cows is very little. You can't find those cows anyhow. Who would know which procedure it had? And therefore, it's bought the machine. Okay, but all those reasons are the reasons that we're going to not speak about. Those are possible reasons why the animal might not be a trefa. Again, each one of them has questions on them. It's not so clear. But what we're going to talk about is a different one. And that is, he said, Rebelsky said, is that if the animal, let's say it had a hole in it, and let's say that hole makes it a trefa, but the hole heals up very, very quickly. You know, how many days they had the holes in the cave is completely healed up. And it says, and therefore, since the hole heals up, or the stitching seals it right up, and it works perfectly well and happens every time, the animal's not a trefa. And this is a question called trefa chazeres lehechshera. If an animal becomes a trefa, like in our case, it had a hole poked into its cave, and then that problem that had the hole that it had disappears, it's gone, it doesn't exist anymore, can that animal come back to being kosher? So Rebelsky suggests that everyone agrees that in that case there is no problem and the animal is not a trefa. Not a question. A trefa could, for sure, if it undoes the problem, if the hole was made in a way that it was going to always work itself out to disappear, then the animal is not a trefa. Now, there are a number of gemaras. Whoops. Sorry about that. There are at least four Gemaras that are relevant to this question as to whether can a trefa become undone or not. And there are many different parts, which are the big question, as you can imagine. We're not going to talk about all those details. Way too involved and intricate for us to get into. And our goal here is not to answer whether trefa is chazer or sechshir or not, but just to show that Rebelsky's position that all people agree that a trefa could be chazer sechshera seems to be hard to justify, hard to defend such a position. And I mentioned two of the shittas. The Rashba says two of the more well-known shittas. The Rashba says trefa means a wound that will not heal. Okay, that's what a trefa is. And if there's a wound that will either get better by itself, or a medicine will get it, make it better, then the animal was never a trefa. But if you can manage to get rid of the animal as being a trefa without healing it, you'll hear how that happens in a second. How does that mean? How does it happen without a healing? It got rid of that healing it, then the animal is trefa. Okay, so if it heals, if it's kind that heals by the body or with a medicine even, according to one of the Gemaras, then the animal's not trefa. The Ra'ah says, the way Prim Gondim understands it, the Ra'ah says that any natural wound that heals, that was made in such a way that it would heal by itself, the animal, it's true that animal's not a trefa. But if the wound was man-made, okay, if the wound was man-made, or caused by some kind of outside force, not a natural hole that happened, but something that happened from an outside way, like a person, or something happened to the animal, then, like if a needle pokes into a lung, then the animal is a trefa, even if it gets better. Okay? And two of the cases that I talked about this are, they're just interesting cases, I'll mention them. They're very similar to each other. And one is Tzum Segidin. Tzum Segidin are tendons that run through the bottom of the leg of a chicken, of a bird. And if they get ripped, the Gemara says that if they get ripped, the animal, one of them gets ripped, the animal's a trefa. Okay, now the Gemara has a shita. We don't pass along the shita, but the Gemara has a shita that says what happens if a chicken, a bird, had its leg cut off high up on the leg, way above the Tzum Segidin. So the din is the animal's not a trefa. Cutting off the leg like that does not make the animal to a trefa. So now the shaila is, what happens if you first cut the Tzum Segidin, so the animal is a trefa, and then you cut off the leg higher up? Well, now it has no problem with Tzum Segidin, because the Tzum Segidin don't exist anymore. It was cut off. So is the animal a trefa because it had Tzum Segidin cut, or is it not a trefa because there's no cut Tzum Segidin anymore? The animal, the whole leg has been chopped off. So the Ramban says that the animal's kosher, because right now it has no simani trefa. Right now it doesn't have a leg, that's fine, no problem with that. It doesn't have any cut Tzum Segidin, so the animal's not a trefa. And the Rashba says, the Rashba I mentioned before, and says, that no, the animal is a trefa. Once the animal became a trefa, because the Tzum Segidin were cut, the animal remains a trefa unless it had healed. This didn't heal. This got just removed, and therefore the animal's a trefa. Similarly, another thing called kol yashir is katna. What happens if an animal has no kidney? The animal is kosher. That does not make the animal too trefa. But what happens if the kidneys shrink? Then a certain amount, if they shrink too much, then the animal is considered trefa. So Shuhra says, well, what happens if the kidney shrinks? The animal's a trefa. What happens if it keeps on shrinking until it disappears? Okay, so now it has no kidney. So no kidney, remember, if you have no kidney, that's not a trefa. So the Shuhra says that the animal is considered trefa, holds on to being a trefa, because why? Kvar nesra ve'ech taksu hechsher. Once it became trefa, because its kidney had shrunk, if it then, it can't become kosher, it's over, it can't become kosher. Because it says, no, maybe it could become kosher, maybe we could say like the Rashi, maybe it can become kosher, and it can undo it. Okay, so the point of mentioning these cases is not to prove whether a trefa could be chayzer lehechsher or not. That's a big shaila and b'shaila and achronim. But rather to show that, in fact, there is at least a machlokes about, there are many shitas who think that once an animal becomes a trefa, particularly if it's done through a man-made way that it became a trefa, like we poked a needle or a syringe into the cava, then that animal cannot become, can't lose its trefa status just because that heals up. In which case that would not be a tzad to be matar, the cows who have been treated with displaced atomism.